have no idea how excited I am. It's 2 weeks in a row now I've been in the studio recording an episode of the ZA Tech Show. We're back. We're back in glory, guys. Up and running. We've moved across to htxt.africa. We've got new hosting, everything else. You can expect an episode a week from us from here on in. Joining me today is one of my favorite panelists here on the ZA Tech Show, Mr. Stephen Ambrose from Strategy Works. Of course, he knows nothing about tech. Nothing. He knows nothing about mobile phones, smartphones, gadgets, wearables, or anything else. We just have him here because he's got an unbelievably short haircut.
And he's a nice guy.
And he uses a Mac, even though he runs Windows on it. So, you know, he's all right.
I'm very Mac'd today. There's Mac on my Mac.
Are you running macOS on your Mac today?
I'm running Mac on my Mac. Can you believe it?
You're back on a Mac. I'm back to Mac.
Jeez,
there we go. So, a topic you know absolutely nothing about, so which is why I've invited you here to speak about it, of course.
Pull me in. I'm always here to learn.
Is wearable tech and the whole host of wearable stuff that's been coming out over the past while. And Mr. Ambrose and I, in fact, today both got an opportunity to get a new wearable to play with. And I think it's probably apt that we speak about it now, because even though I've only been using it for a couple of hours, I'm actually quite impressed with it. And that
you
is...
You know what my number is?
Yeah?
59.
59. What do you mean 59?
It's my heart rate.
Is that how old you are? 59?
No. Jesus, that's my heart rate. No, I'm a lot younger than my heart rate.
Okay. Should I check what mine is right now?
And then we can explain why we got a number.
I'm 68. It's all the coffee I've had today. There's 67. It's dropping.
Breathe.
So Mr. Ambrose is substantially older than what I am, which is why his heart rate is so much lower than mine. If you look at that whole average thing, apparently you're supposed to take 220, take your age off of that, and that's supposed to be your maximum heart rate.
Yep.
But at the same time, that also means that your minimum heart rate or your resting heart rate should drop, because your heart beats slower the older you get, right?
Theoretically, yes.
Is that because the world doesn't surprise you anymore?
Yeah, you just don't. You take it in your
You don't
stride.
Care about
don't
anything
give a
anymore.
Damn. There is actually only one benefit of getting older, which you'll find out one of these days, is that you actually don't give a damn.
Okay.
But other than that, getting old's not for sissies. Trust me.
You give less Fs.
You give a whole lot. Well, you've given them.
Yeah, I mean, you're running low on Fs, you have to kind of keep them back, right?
I think in the universe there are only so many. There's a finite amount of Fs per person.
Indeed.
And at a certain point, you ain't got no more. You just keep moving. But listen, wearable tech is just becoming a huge thing. And I'm super impressed with this device.
It's so let's not keep them in suspense
it's
anymore.
Light.
This is the Fitbit Charge HR. Now, if you've at all listened to the ZA Tech Show over the past while, you'll know how absolutely besotted I was with my TomTom Cardio multi-sport watch, mainly because it alleviates me of the need to wear a heart rate strap. All right, I do a lot of exercise these days, a lot more than what I did 6 months ago and a substantial amount more than what I did a year before that.
He's half the man with double the sport.
But the reality is heart rate, as was so sagely noted in the presentation today, is one of the best ways for you to actually monitor your level of exertion regardless of sport. So remember when wearables came out, all right? We're talking Nike Fuel Band.
One that I got and the one that sort of hit the mainstream was the Nike Fuel Band. It's still a cool-looking device.
It's a great-looking device, beautiful UX in terms of everything else, fatally flawed in that its metric for measuring, not performance, but activity was an accelerometer. Right, flawed in that that's not the best way to do it, because a lot of the time, like me, I'm a cyclist primarily, right? I'm not moving my arms while I'm cycling.
Correct. So therefore, counting while you
I can be burning thousands and thousands of calories with a heart rate racing because I'm climbing up this gigantic hill and the fuel band is sitting there telling me I'm doing no work. So
no fuels.
So it was a logical progression into the heart rate monitoring space. You know, for the longest time, what wearables were doing was they were hooking up with heart rate monitors. Garmin produced a number of devices that allowed you to, over Bluetooth or Ant Plus or whatever the case was, at least hook up. But then you had to wear a heart rate monitor. So when TomTom released the Cardio and Jabra started releasing these headphones,
suddenly the technology popped up everywhere.
Absolutely. So, you know, the ability to sample a heart rate unbelievably accurately, I might add, more accurate than a heart rate monitor in the form of a band most of the time. And when I say a band, I mean one that you wear around your chest. So these devices sample it straight off your arm by sensing the the difference in blood capillary volume, so to speak, in your arm as it pumps.
It notices that.
It notices that. It monitors that, and that's a beat of your heart. So the cool thing with this is, and what I'm quite excited about, this is the thing I loved about the TomTom Cardio, and what I'm loving about this device so far is the fact that even though you wear it on your arm, you have the ability to, regardless of what you're doing, if you're exerting yourself, your heart rate's going up. And therefore, it's able to track the fact that you're doing exercise at that point in time. So that's kind of cool.
It is cool.
What I love about it as well is the fact that it does it all the time. It's a constant heart rate monitoring, and I think that is super, super cool and remarkable with this tiny battery. Yeah, for sure.
It's actually the first one that I've tried where the heart rate monitor is on by default. Most of them, you've got to actually create an activity or start an activity.
Yes, absolutely. Hit a button, double tap it,
something
like that. Do something
to get the heart rate to monitor, and then it only monitors as long as that activity is running, which it's a little bit of a pain. But this one, you put it on, and it instantly links to your app once you've set it up and monitors your heart rate continuously all the time, which is really pretty cool.
Now, it's not just that. It's not just the fact that it does this that I think is very, very cool. Is in order to work out what your theoretical maximum heart rate is, you're recommended to take 220 and minus your age from it, and that's your theoretical max. But the reality is, it's like you know, body mass index. It's completely theoretical. It's designed to be across a average of a gigantic sample of people. So by definition, it's not accurate enough, okay? And people have different heart rates depending on their body composition, their age, their level of fitness, all of these kinds of things. So the reality is the better way to work it out is in a more scientific way and based on what your minimum heart rate is, your resting heart rate is, and then working out a threshold above that. The benefit of this checking your heart rate all the time is that it's not relying on an algorithm like 220 minus your age. It actually, over the first couple of days of you using it, figures out what your heart rate zones are by it tracking you 24 hours a day during your sleep, during activity cycles, during moderate activity, during watching CSI or The Walking Dead on the couch, you know, whatever the case is. But it'll work that kind of stuff out and give you a really, really decent view of that. And I think that is super, super cool in itself. For somebody like me that's obsessed with all of these metrics and measurement, you want them to be accurate, right?
And it's not even a matter of accurate. It's a matter of useful in the calculation of what you're doing and how you're doing what you're doing. Because the difference here is that the heart rate is now one of the elements, like your walking and everything, that monitors what you do. Whereas before, heart rate was something you took for a specific particular function that you did. So when you went running, you monitored your heart rate. Now you're monitoring your heart rate all the time while you sleep, and they're using that to monitor how you are, how your activity is going and how your health is going. And I think there's a lot more coming from the app in terms of what you can do and what you can learn using a continual heart rate monitoring. And the first one you mentioned, which is really cool, over a period of 3-4 days, it's going to work out your base heart rate.
Yep.
And then from there, all sorts of other things can be worked out,
I mean, this
which
is
really
so
smart.
You take 220 minus my age. I'm 38 now, all right? Leaves me with a heart rate of 182. Okay, I do a lot of exercise. I've worked out hard. The highest I've ever recorded a heart rate is 175, 176. At that point, things were getting so blurry, right? I needed to, like, stop and, like, have a little sit down. No, honestly, it was I was going to lose control of my bicycle, okay? I was way beyond hypoxic, all right? Yeah. Unable to get enough air in, all right? Let alone some of the other body chemistry that was going on in my body. So that's wrong. It's not an actual maximum, all right? They were talking today about sportsmen pushing above their theoretical maximum. I don't think that that's realistic either. I think that those people are born with
a different
heart,
like,
or
some people have got different VO2 maxes.
Exactly,
everybody's different. I think it's
so this thing's ability to do that, I think, is really, really cool. But 5-day battery life, which I think is unbelievably rad. It's the same as the Fitbit Charge in that it does the same things, but it now has heart rate. Yeah, it just has a different clasp, which is quite nice.
Yeah,
it's actually like a proper watch clasp, which is nice. Very light. very inconspicuous. The only smart feature it really has is the fact that it'll notify you of an oncoming, you know, incoming call. It won't do SMSs, text messages, WhatsApps, all of that kind of stuff. And I had the Garmin Vivo Smart recently, and that does all of that. So I thought that, you know, I was torn between whether I liked that feature or not about it, but I think the fact that it does calls is kind of cool. And then, of course, it synchronizes with the cloud and does everything else. And a lot of what makes Fitbit stuff cool is all of the cloud services that sits behind it. $2,300 is what it'll cost you. And right now, I'm quite enjoying it. I think that's kind of rad. Let's see where...
I've been wearing the charge where my sentiment lies in like 2 weeks. Yeah. I've been wearing the charge for 2 months now. So it actually makes no difference to my life, other than now I'm starting to track my heart rate in real time 24/7, which means I'm asleep with this thing, which might be interesting in and of itself because it tracks... you know, how you sleep, when you sleep. And in fact, I think the app gives you some advice about what you should be doing or what you shouldn't be doing. So on multiple levels, I think as a promoter of health, it's a great, great, great tool. And here's an interesting thing. If you're on Discovery, they will now contribute 750 Rand towards this device once off per member.
So that brings the price down dramatically. Yeah,
brings
sure.
it down to 1,500 Rand, which is... not a bad amount of money to pay for something.
But of course, this brings me to the next thing. And the one thing everybody's got to be aware of, and this is possibly an interesting direction for us to take this discussion, is there's a reason Discovery's doing that, right? There's a reason the medical aids are doing that
absolutely.
And subsidizing it.
They're
and
collecting
it's not
data.
It, exactly. Everyone says, it's like the typical vitality model. They just want to make sure we're healthier because healthier people in turn cost less in medical bills and life insurance is less of a hassle and this, that, and the next thing. The point blank reality of it, it's far more sinister than that. The world is about data today. Mm. They want data. It's really, really cool for you to be able to have a constantly heart monitoring device strapped to you. But the reality is, Stephen, you're not going to use the 24 hours a day heart rate monitoring capability for anything but it algorithmically telling you what you should be doing in your life, or maybe using it during exercise, or maybe looking at the instance where you're in your deepest sleep to figure out what your proper resting heart rate is, or whatever the case is. So all of the rest of it is trending information, and Discovery wants to be able to trend stuff. He wants, they want the ability
to
figure that out so that they gain deeper insight into their clients, what they like. Because, don't forget that outside of being a healthcare provider, all right, and, a healthcare company and an insurance company and a medical insurance company, everything else, Discovery more and more is morphing into a marketing company, into a retailer, into all of this other thing. And they're finding so many of their revenue streams are coming out of things that they attach to their core products. They're rolling out concept stores at the moment. These concept stores will not only have brokerage stuff inside it, but they will also sell devices and sporting equipment and
just shows
that kind
you
of
how
stuff.
Technology so is in everything that we do.
Completely changing the entire thing.
But you missed one huge point. At the end of the day, the more information they've got about you as a client from a health perspective point of view, the more they're integrated with their electronic, they're trying their best to get all your records and everything online. Using big data, and interestingly enough, Discovery as a financial services organization are really good at using big data.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they're doing it for cars, they're doing it for life insurance, they've been doing it for healthcare for years. All that information about you as a person, as an individual, will start feeding into how much you pay for all these services, which is quite a big thing. They're doing it to a small extent right now, but can you imagine your premiums all start adapting based on your physical activity? They reward you with points now, but imagine if your physical activity was really good and you actually got a discount, a financial incentive to stay healthy.
Yeah, but at the same time...
So I think there's a lot, we're going to see a lot of stuff coming out
of that.
There's
two problems in terms of that. Firstly, right, if you are genetically predisposed to health issues, all right...
Well, they'll have your genome done for you shortly.
They're going to figure out how to punish you for that and raise your premiums for that firstly. If you live an unhealthy lifestyle, they're going to punish you. But here's the funny bit in all of that, all right, is if you turn around as an individual and say, no, I will not allow you to track me and everything else, they're going to treat you the same as somebody that smokes 600 cigarettes a day, drinks 25 liters of wine, and lives on McDonald's 24 hours a day, because the reality is they're not going to be able to track you and figure out, you know, how you're living your life. And that is scary. And that's starting to edge into Big Brother territory, which I think is not okay. It should, you know, the more the stuff becomes the norm, the more people that opt out of that model and have a hassle with that model are going to be the ones that are punished. They're going to be forced to be part of this financially, because
I think, and the truth be told, I think if you look at all the stats, you look at how much vitality has actually changed the whole business of discovery.
Sure.
In terms of healthcare, in terms of wellness, rather than simply medical aid, you know, they pay when you're sick. The impact it's had on the entire business model is only going to get more and more fundamental.
Sure, absolutely.
And truth be told, I can't see any real downside. If someone's got a bad lifestyle, I be affected by them? Right now I am. So if you've got a certain percentage of the population that's unhealthy, doesn't take care of themselves, smokes, eats anything they want, is overweight, it reduces my cover or it increases my cost. One way.
Problem is, nobody looks at the extreme, Stephen,
absolutely.
Is the reality. At the complete other end of the equation, people that run alarming distances, put unbelievable strain on their joints,
correct,
and therefore require joint ops more regularly.
There's always outliers, but we're talking about the middle of the road.
Extreme sportsmen fall off mountains and break themselves into little bitty pieces. All right, there's a variety of things, and the interesting bit for me is that. It's always seen as healthier when you're doing all of the super active stuff. But the reality is, most of the people I know that are sitting in that league are putting their bodies through hell because the endurance sports are doing, firstly. Secondly, these are also the people that are more predisposed to doing random stuff with their diets in an attempt to shed the last 0.5% of body fat.
We won't
right?
talk about banting, will we?
No, well,
let's not go there.
I'm talking more extreme than that. I'm talking about people living on two shakes a day and one decent meal a day because
they want to get down to 1% body fat.
You know, I'm really playing devil's advocate here because I'm all for living a healthy lifestyle, but I think the extremes are going to be the problem. And I think, you know, it is for me still very, very sad. If you are the person that says, excuse me, I would just like my privacy, all right, that you're going to be treated like the most unhealthy human on the face of the earth.
Look, the fact is, you got wearables that are attached to your body. At some point, they're going to land up probably being in your body. You've got smartphone platforms that are picking up that data, turning it into useful information for you for whatever purpose. That information is now, this Fitbit is now linked to Discovery. They're already picking up my activities and rewarding me for it. And we're moving into a world where all this integrated information can be used for good or evil, makes no difference.
Sure.
But if you use it and it's used effectively, you could potentially get a phone call from your doctor to say that Discovery Health have notified us that your heart rate and your pulse has become erratic. And based on your history and everything else we know about you, we suggest you get to your doctor in the next half an hour quickly. Now, it sounds like science fiction, but we are... all the elements of that scenario are now in place, and we're starting to see it at prices that everybody can afford. I mean, you used to have to spend tens of thousands of rands on an ECG monitor, go to your doctor, strap yourself on with lots of little electrodes, and they'd print out your heart rate. Now, for a tenth, even less, 2,000 rand, you can pop one on your arm. All that information is wired directly to your smartphone, can be shared with whomever you like. So all the elements of the so-called big data revolution, all the elements of what's going on in terms of healthcare and technology are right there.
TomTom's cardio watch, as an example, right, is 98% as accurate as an ECG.
Correct.
It was tested that
Correct.
Way. It was tested in a number of different environments by a number of physicians. It was shown off at CES a year ago, not this last CES, but the CES before, and people were astounded. It was tested in an environment where people wore an ECG monitor and they wore the watch, and they found everything to be perfectly consistent within 90% accuracy, so that's interesting. The scary bit for me, Stephen, okay, so let's say that's great right now, and we're looking at that and we're going like, wow, 5 years ago, Would we have thought any of this would have been possible? No, obviously not. I mean, very, very bright future, etc. Here's the sinister side. So again, a discussion I was having with Adam. I was having a discussion with Adam recently, and last year he did a data analysis course, like a data journalism course, like a mini data journ course. And one of the things they had to do was they needed to analyze a chunk of data using a variety of tools, mostly just spreadsheets and Excel and stuff like that, and unbelievably powerful how much you can do with those tools. But the data sample was a 24-hour sample of movement and accelerometer data taken from a Galaxy S2 smartphone.
Which is pretty old tech by today's
standards. Old tech, all right. However, you could tell so much based on the movement information from that, all right. They were saying, I mean, there was that story that broke last year, that they can tell with 100% accuracy what you are doing. Are you sitting? Are you running? Are you nervous and jumping up and down? All right. There's this huge research project that happened last year where the Michael J. Fox Foundation is working with a variety of sensor makers, because just based on the movement somebody undergoes.
Well, that's the right. Alzheimer thing.
It's Parkinson's.
Parkinson's, I'm
all right.
Sorry.
And Lou Gehrig's disease, right? Which I think is the same thing. Sorry, I stand corrected. I remember it as Lou Gehrig's disease. But the reality is a smartphone accelerometer in a person suffering from that ailment's pocket, all right, can 100% identify when they are having an attack or whatever the case is at any one point in time. Think about the stuff for epilepsy, right? And what's happening is all of that research and all of that big data money is going into figuring out these tiny little micro movements that precede an episode or an attack.
That's exactly what I was saying.
But here's the thing. They can tell that you're doing other things too, Stephen. They can tell when you're on the loo. They can tell when you're walking down the street.
Well, listen, they can be really basic. Last time you whipped Waze out on your way somewhere, and it says to you, oops, I see you moving.
Sure.
Are you the passenger, or should we wait a few minutes till you park and get on with things? I mean,
Greenway used to joke about all of this stuff, like, you know, ages ago, that all of these devices can catch you in potentially compromising positions. They can catch you in, compromising positions. Now dial it back and put it into the context of something like this Fitbit Charge HR that I have on my arm right now. It's got an accelerometer. It has a heart rate monitor. Okay, it has two very sophisticated sensors built into it,
and it's
monitoring.
Got an altimeter, so when you climb stairs and that,
it is
so
monitoring.
It's really amazing.
It's monitoring all of that information simultaneously, 24 hours a day. Are you comfortable with the more intimate, private details of your life being exposed? All right. Firstly, you're going to sign a disclaimer with your healthcare company, your Discovery, or whatever the case is. Say, sure. You guys aren't going to use this for anything else, all right? Two questions. What happens if they use it for more than that, firstly? Secondly, all right, what happens when that data starts getting into the hands of people that you don't want to know? And somebody starts saying, well, you know, have you ever wondered what a day in the lifestyle of Stephen Ambrose looks like? And starts putting gross detail of what your movement data has shown, what you've been up to for the past 24 hours. Are you living in a world? I don't think a lot of people are living in a world where they're 100% happy for that level of transparency to exist. The trust stuff scares me. The trust stuff keeps me awake at night, because people are just not aware. They just sign that stuff away, right? It's this big end-user license agreement that's somewhere in the setup process that they don't even read, because it's 25 screens of a smartphone long, and they just go accept and tick and whatever and carry
on.
Yeah,
no one reads that stuff.
And that's a problem, because I think that the sensor tech's only going to get better.
Oh, no, it is. And it's going to get more comprehensive. And what's happening, which is really, really, really powerful, is the apps and the systems around the apps are getting smarter and smarter and more integrated. So suddenly you'll get data from one sensor. You'll even have data from your house feeding into it. So they'll know what you're doing at home, when you're at home. You know, so you're right. Privacy and what people do with this information is huge.
Big deal.
Back at the ranch, everything is. A hammer can be used to build a house, and it can be used to knock someone's brains in. It's the same dumb tool. So I think we have to be very aware of the risks of everything. But at the same time, I think we can't ignore the fact that we're moving into a data age where everything is measured, connected and analyzed. And sure. We're going to see a ton of that happening faster and faster and faster. And already, I mean, in the space of a year, the wearable tech has matured unbelievably. What was cool a year ago is almost prehistoric today.
You can imagine
what's coming down the line.
But I think what saddens me at the moment is I see amazing progress, and that's so cool. I'm a tech head.
You enjoy it.
I'm a complete pushover for the stuff. I mean, you can hear I'm a big fan of this stuff. It's really rare to have this job right now at this point in time because there's something I'm hugely fanatical about, and the technology marries with it so nicely. But there's no, you know, I still think there's massive opportunity here from the perspective that no one is getting it 100% right. And I'll unpack this for a second, right? There are devices I've played with over the past 6 to 8 months where I really think this market has matured in the past 6 to 8 months, where the products that are getting into the hands of average end users are really, really remarkable.
Yeah, really low pricing.
And the software that sits behind them and the cloud services that sit behind them and everything else are great. But I think there's just not enough integration going on. So again,
agreed. Right? Absolutely.
So one of the most favorite things I played with in the past 6 months, one of my most favorite things was the Jabra Pulse headphones. Okay, so these are wireless Bluetooth headphones with a heart rate monitor built into them. Right, you strap them on, you go for a run, it's really, really rad. They don't have a GPS in because you don't need the GPS because they're streaming your music from your smartphone, which has the GPS in. Really, really cool, really, really smart. Okay. You can feed that data to start smartphone apps and stuff like that, which is unbelievably cool and rad. So you don't necessarily have to use the built-in application or the recommended application from it. You can use something that you're more familiar with, like a Strava or an Endomondo or whatever the case is. Also unbelievably cool. All right. It then also speaks your heart rate to you at different points in time based on the fact that you can reach like a milestone, like a 1 kilometer into your run or whatever the case is. Or you can set a heart rate threshold and it'll tell you you're running too fast, you're running too slow, or your heart rate's too high or your heart rate's too low. That's also cool. But again, all of that stuff all enabled by software. So the vendor sits down and writes a brilliant piece of software for it, but that brilliant piece of software doesn't necessarily do all of the pro features that you want from Strava or Endomondo. So you've got to trade off the cool features like the reading out of your heart rate and stuff like that off. You know, you can either have that or you can have the pro features you want. Then there's the whole problem with integration. And please don't get me wrong. I think this is a remarkable device. It is really, really a good device and probably one of the best things I've played with to date. But it's my job to poke holes and stuff and like shoot holes and stuff. And, you know, the reality is there's still not enough integration going on. It doesn't integrate with other devices out there. It integrates with your smartphone and a piece of software. So, again, and that's what I'm coming around to, is it's like you really want all of your devices to be speaking to each other seamlessly so that you have the ability to say, I really like the fact that I've got my heart rate coming from my arm with my Fitbit Charge HR right now. Why can't I have a dumb set of headphones that don't have a heart rate monitor in them but have the Bluetooth capability to speak to my watch? All right. And the watch maybe becomes the conduit that speaks to the phone. Or maybe I've got a fitness tracker watch, right? But it doesn't have a built-in heart rate monitor. But I've got my headphones that have got a built-in heart rate monitor. So the problem is no one is actually speaking. No one's actually doing the integration. And there's so much overlap. And because there's so much overlap, there's also so much deficit.
But
and
now,
that needs to get ironed out.
Okay. Now, here's something that popped up this week, and it's totally tech-related. Under Armour. Now,
They've been buying. So they bought Map My Ride or Map My Run.
Correct.
They've recently developed another partnership with Endomondo. I don't think they've actually bought Endomondo,
they're building up.
Watch
a
the
huge
space. You know, the reality is
of software, services, and various bits and pieces that talk exactly to the point you make.
And what does Under Armour do? Traditionally, they're a clothing brand. So what they do is they make clothing for sports people. Absolutely.
But again, they were at CES this year. You know, they had a huge stand. They don't have any tech-related product other than these apps that they bought.
Not yet.
Well, hardware products as yet. But it's unbelievably interesting how a clothing and healthwear brand, is suddenly getting involved in all this wearable and tracking and app data stuff because it just shows you where it's all going. You're going to be building it into clothing. You're going to be building it into absolutely everything.
Take and dial it back a sec, all right? So one of the first brands to come on board with all of the Google Glass stuff was what? Like this big sunglasses brand that owns Ray-Bans, that owns Oakley, et cetera, et cetera, all right? And, at the same time, at Intel Developer Forum last year in September when I was there, who had the most interesting products that they were talking about that they've worked with Intel? Fossil, et cetera.
Luxury lifestyle brands
are the ones that are going to... They understand how the product must be packaged because they've been researching lifestyle and accessorization for like 40, 50 years now. Correct. So they understand the context of it, right? They know what role the device must play in someone's life. Of course, there's one example, you know, there's one exception to this entire rule.
Come on, share it with us.
It's a fruit company. Come on, Apple.
Oh, yeah.
They're the only tech company that has a magical affinity that often exceeds that of the fashion brands. They just somehow get it.
Well,
right?
They've got a cachet of their own. People across all brands, across all cultures, across everything have an affinity to what they do. Why? We can go into that for 45 podcasts.
Absolutely.
But the fact is...
But they are the
that's
ones.
What
yeah,
they do.
Sure.
And shortly, within probably 6 weeks, we're going to see the launch of the iWatch, which has a lot of the stuff built in.
What, you mean you haven't received your beta model yet?
No, afraid not. Okay, I'm not cool. on that
I'll
list.
Put in a word for you. It's no problem. I've got a little thing to... Oh, wait. I wasn't supposed to say anything.
They're going to come. The Apple police will be here to remove
You're not going to like it, though, Stephen. That gold plating wears off after like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, no. I'll get the aluminum one, as they call
the
it.
The aluminum one. But do you think I have a point there in terms of the lack of integration?
No, there's no question.
Right,
everyone's developing individually. Everyone's doing their own thing to some extent. It's starting. We're early days now. A lot of people are not connecting the dots. But the fact is the tech is becoming so ubiquitous, so easy, so cheap that they'll build it into everything. I mean, imagine if they build this into your running shirt.
Yeah.
You put it
pledge.
On and you go. That's it.
Intel's already shown some of this stuff off, which is quite interesting.
So, I think it'll be seamless. As you put it on, it'll switch off your others and switch that one on. I know we talk like futuristic, but it's here. It's happening. Sure. And I think we are going to see amazing things coming. In the meanwhile, if you want a little piece of this action, highly recommend this thing. I'm pretty stoked.
I think it's definitely got huge potential. I haven't been disappointed by a Fitbit device yet. I think this is not the device for the heavily obsessed kind of someone that lends towards a prosumer.
Watch.
Absolutely.
No.
But I think, they have one coming out that's going to do that called the Surge, right?
The Surge, which gives you
which comes
watch
in April.
Type things.
Yeah, and I think it's got built-in GPS capabilities. Again, this doesn't have a GPS, so it's not a great running watch.
But I think for the average couch potato and someone who's just concerned about their health and their fitness, it's a great motivator. There's no question.
Something I poo-pooed like 6 months or a year ago, and I'm really eating my words right now, is smartphones as the best fitness devices and health devices. So, here's the thing. I never disputed at the time that they had a valuable role to play. But the reality is, right, smartphones, with all of the raw sensor stuff they've got built in, maybe what they need is they need access to a heart rate monitor. That's external, but at the end of the day, you can get a Bluetooth version of that. Or, as you were pointing out, you have the ability to sync this over Bluetooth to your phone,
to your heart rate,
the thing
or
with
to
the
your
phone,
apps on your phone.
But the thing with the phone is exactly that: apps. Right? You want a new feature. You want something to behave in a specific way. There's the opportunity for somebody to write an app, or for you to write an app to change that. Okay. It's a little bit more difficult with an embedded device because it needs to behave in a specific way. It needs to fit into its industrial design and whatever the case is. The weird thing with phones is two features inside a smartphone right now, or actually, I'm going to expand it, three features inside a phone make them killer, killer fitness devices. One, internet connection.
That makes everything better.
Absolutely, because you need access to all of these cloud services and stuff like that. It doesn't exist if it's not on the internet. Second thing is all of this sensor stuff that's built into it, all right? The accelerometers, the gyroscopes, the
altimeters,
you name it, all of that
whatever.
Kind of stuff. What do you think the third one is, in my opinion? Music. people want to train with music, specifically cardio, right?
No question.
Right. Have you seen anybody in the past 2 years, Stephen, walking around with a distinct purpose-built music device?
Yeah.
Apart from one or two...
A couple of retros at the gym.
Apart from one or two meatheads at the gym, right? Seriously, using, and it's like, yeah, it's because they're still using a Nokia... They're still using a Nokia 2110, right?
They're busy texting away on their iPhone, and they've got an iPod Nano attached to their clothing, which makes no sense.
One of the primary reasons I wanted smartphone battery to go up is because you put huge demand on it during exercise.
Absolutely.
Right? You're stressing the GPS out. You're stressing all of the sensors out. The process is running like hell because it's chunking through all of this data, and on top of it, you're playing music.
Streaming music.
Streaming music, probably over your internet connection. I mean, you know what? This is the thing. It's a tough ask for anyone.
The last time I downloaded music.
Absolutely. I'm all over RDO at the moment. I'm absolutely loving RDO.
I must tell you, I'm enjoying Deezer, funny enough.
So I didn't like Deezer. All right.
Well, they've
so
changed the app like mad. I don't know if you've seen it the last couple of weeks.
The weird thing is, right, they're all six of one, half a dozen of the other.
They've all got
If you know what you want to listen to.
Correct.
They all have a very similar catalog. So if you want to go listen to Led Zeppelin, or you want to listen to
anything,
I don't know, One Direction, because Steven's a closet
fan.
He loves One Direction. You know, if you want to listen to one of those bands, all right, you have the ability to go in and grab their album and listen to it and stream it or download it for offline use. Steven, the thing for me is, all right, and this is the reason I moved away from Spotify, their curated playlists were starting to become a little bit too pushy. So they're pushing a specific kind of music that they were encouraged by the record labels to do. They were taking money. Like it's in the basic old DJ days, payola. They wanted, you know, the moment you listen to one of those playlists, all right, they're pushing tunes on you that are going to be popular, that you're going to go out and maybe buy the album to or go to the gig, whatever the case is. So I wanted a more organic, a more algorithm-driven kind of way of doing it. Years ago, I used to use a piece of software called Pandora before they geolocated it and blocked it in South Africa, and you couldn't use Pandora anymore. But Pandora's thing was like music genome, essentially. They try to figure out the genetic code that makes one piece of music dissimilar or similar to another, all right? And if you put in four or five artists to distill it down to the genetic code of what you wanted to listen to and then be able to serve up more accurate music, and it was really, really good at the time. Audio is the closest I've come to that. So what I can do with audio is I can say I'm in the mood to, you know, I feel like listening to music like Death Cab for Cutie's Transatlanticism Now, Please. And it'll go find me artists that I've never heard of in my life before, but fit my mood really, really well. And that's...
Look, Deezer, that's a cool feature. Deezer's got a similar thing.
They've upgraded it. Oh, my word.
They've got a thing called Flow, which works really well. You click Flow, it looks at your whole history, whatever you've listened to.
I tried it, Stephen. It comes up with good stuff. Terrible.
There you go. The battle of the streaming music platforms.
Oh, there you go. But either way, I think we're agreeing about the fact that the concept of buying music and downloading music is just dead.
But even I've been playing with a new Lumia 535, which we can talk about. I'm sure you spoke about it. But the new Lumia 535, R1,600 for a really decent smartphone, comes with free mix radio.
Yep.
Built in. And I was playing with, I haven't played with mixed radio for a long while. Mm. And I was really impressed at how they've improved the curation. They've got a lot of mood type stuff. And the quality of the sound, the quality of the music, and the quality of the repertoire on there is pretty impressive. I mean, for theoretic, well, nothing's for free, but for a little bit of data, it's really impressive what they've done, what Microsoft have done with this. So I think music streaming is just a given across whatever platform you're on, and that's what's so scary. Android, as dominant as they are, still don't have a native music streaming platform that's part of the system, and iOS in South Africa doesn't have it either.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it's so damn difficult to change. I mean, the hilarious thing about everything is, like, everyone else in the world, so Netflix, Hulu, Google Play.
Everything.
Everything. Like Xbox Music and Xbox,
Even Sony. Sony apparently have just
everyone geolocates.
To,
all right?
Yeah.
Apple turns around and says, oh, you want to act like you're in the U.S.? Sweet, no problem. Just pull down from this box and pretend you're in the U.S.
Yeah,
and lack of no
we're
problem.
We're happy to let you go.
I mean, it makes me laugh. But you know what? That's clearly working, you know? It's clearly working. So, if you want to make use of iTunes Radio, just change your region to the US.
And pick you're yourself. Done. Use Absolutely. One. Yeah, use even if you want to sign on to the store, you sign on there at a US address. They don't check you unless you want to pay for something. Then it gets Absolutely. Tricky.
There's clever ways around that. But that is stuff for another podcast.
Whole nother podcast.
So that was a fun discussion, Mr. Ambrose. Should we get on to picks of the week? Because I think we're also running out of time. We're a decent distance into this podcast already. Time flies when you're having fun. Yes? No?
Oh, yeah. Picks I'm of the happy, week? I'm Very happy good. To talk okay, picks cool. of the week.
So what do you got for us this week?
Two things I've been playing with that it's been like mobile. We're talking about Mobile World Congress coming up.
Absolutely.
So all the smartphone companies are churning out smartphones. Two phones, one at the high end and one at the low end, have really impressed me this week. The first one is the Vodafone Smart 4 Turbo.
Yes.
I mean, 1499 rand. Sorry, I've got the 1600 stuck in my head. But it's basically 1500 bucks for a quad-core LTE 4G-enabled smartphone running the latest version of Android 4.4 with a decent-sized screen, reasonable amount of RAM, a gig of basic memory, plus, I think, 8 gig of main, which you can upgrade. Build quality that's not too shabby. A rear camera that's not shabby.
All of the white-labeled phones are getting so much better.
Interestingly, the story on this phone is it's not actually a white-labeled phone. It's a custom bespoke phone made for Vodafone because they're so big.
All right.
They go to a manufacturer and say, we want X. And they've got the scale, and obviously they can order a couple of million, and they get amazing quality for basically $110-$115, which is incredible.
It's astounding.
So I've been using that for about a week, and I must tell you, I am pretty blown away. It does everything. It's got NFC, it's got LTE, it's got full GPS, it's got a really responsive screen. Quite a few of the games I tried worked just fine.
Oh,
I didn't try
cool.
some heavy
it
ones.
It should be fair, yeah?
Yeah. Every now and then it lagged, and if I had too many things open, Android gets a little funky and does weird stuff. But in general, what you were paying $3,500 to $4,000 for 6 months ago, you're getting all in one little package, and the battery life is pretty awesome. It got me 2 days battery life.
So let me ask you one question quickly, and this is going to reinforce the fact that this is an unbelievably good deal. How much does an LTE dongle, an LTE MiFi cost today?
Probably in the region of $2,000.
There you go. So it's $600
for
cheaper.
A full phone.
All right, and because it's got an LTE modem in, you could essentially and use it as an LTE MiFi device.
Yeah, if you
In fact, you'd probably have better battery life out of that than you get out of a MiFi.
Probably. You're actually quite right, because it's got a bigger battery than the average
MiFi. And it's designed to power a screen and all of this other stuff.
And as long as you keep the screen off, which is the major user battery life, you probably get double a MiFi. That's a really smart move. I didn't think of that.
It's alarming. People don't think about so many of these things. The MTN Stepper, also another example of a fantastic phone for very little. The SmartTab 3G, also a Vodacom device or a Vodafone device. When that thing launched, the package it was available on was cheaper than buying the data and not getting the tablet.
Exactly.
So it's like, a call to everybody that needs a data bundle right now, go sign up for this deal and then give the tablet to somebody you think deserves it. I mean, so...
Or your kid or your coworker, load it full of
videos on an SD card and take it to the beach and sit on the beach and watch videos, because guess what? You're essentially being given a tablet for free. So people have got to look at a lot of this stuff this way,
But that's really fascinating how the whole market has changed.
Sure.
And the other end of the scale... I've been playing with the new Huawei. I've gone completely blank on the...
At least it's not an Asus. Mate. I mean, Asus makes fantastic devices, but it's like I can never figure out the difference between a pad phone and a phone pad. So this is the Ascend Mate.
It's the Ascend Mate, and it's the new Ascend Mate. It's got a 6-inch screen, and yet it's
okay,
not...
Okay, so it's a Note. It's a phablet, right?
It is a phablet, except for one minor detail.
Doesn't have a stylus.
Its physical body is... essentially the same size as an iPhone 6 Plus.
Okay.
So it's a phablet. I've got it here somewhere. It's hiding. It's a phablet, but it doesn't feel like a phablet.
It's very nice and thin.
Incredibly thin, and for an Apple aficionado, it's actually brilliantly made.
Yeah. No stylus, though, which I find remarkable. You know, remarkable. I can understand why Apple wouldn't have a stylus to their device, because they turned around a while back and said, you know what, we'll never build a stylus into it. And besides, they wanted Mont Blanc to make some money off of selling some special pens with special stylus. But that's beautiful. That's really nice.
It's and look at the quality.
When you gave it to
me,
I immediately thought it was a HTC.
Yeah.
Felt like an HTC. Yeah. Oh, that's a remarkably good screen.
Incredibly good screen. 13 megapixel top-notch camera.
Expensive?
Fingerprint.
Huawei's normally two grand cheaper
than
anything.
This thing's going to be 7,000 or 8,000 Rand.
That's crazy.
It's going to undercut everything in the market.
Half the price of an iPhone 6 Plus. It's half the price of an iPhone 6 Plus.
It's also got a fingerprint reader in a really smart place, which works.
Is it a swipey one?
No,
or is
you
it
just touch it. All you right. touch it and it bam.
So
it
that
reads.
Now makes two vendors that have got a fingerprint reader that you can just put your finger on.
And it works, 99.9%. But the other thing that makes this phone really impressive and why it's one of my picks of the week is if you look at the UI, it looks suspiciously like someone else.
Oh,
we know.
But they've been emulating iOS for like the longest time.
But they've done an amazing job. It's smooth, it's slick, there's no menu structure. What you see on the screen is what you get. It hasn't done anything weird, it doesn't reboot. Oh, and it's 4G Category 6 LTE enabled.
Oh, nice.
So it's got every spec.
So stick a telecom cement to it and
it flies. Because it's carrier aggregation. So they've ticked absolutely every single box. And I received a press release today. Cell C have done a special deal for this for the next month. They're going to be selling a gold one with 3 gig of main memory, 32 gig of RAM, and it's going to be under 10,000 Rand.
That's amazing.
So, and it's really the most remarkable device. I'm super, super impressed with the quality.
Well, I don't know why anybody would want to buy an Android device these days with more storage. I mean, there's this lovely thing called an SD card slot.
Well, that takes SD cards.
Yeah, so
and in fact, the one they're releasing is dual SIM as well.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah, I think we're going to see an increasingly... an increasing number of vendors starting to put dual SIM solutions together.
I think it's becoming more and more mainstream.
So Mr. Greenway's now got a Z3, a full-size Z3, Xperia Z3, but the dual SIM version.
This is
fantastic. He's dropped a
data SIM,
into the one side and a voice and a SMS SIM into the other side, and he says a match made in heaven. Absolutely
so
fantastic.
So watch out. I mean, everyone's been talking about the Huawei's and the ZTEs and the Chinese manufacturers taking on the high-end
guys. Not a lot coming out of ZTE that
Nothing.
We've seen in South Africa
very
right now, but Huawei has shaped. It's very
and Huawei are really, apparently they're going to be doing a lot in South Africa, a lot of top-notch phones. And if this is the quality that they're offering at the price they're offering, I think you're going to see and hear a lot more of them
Absolutely.
In the next little while.
Absolutely.
Really super impressed.
Cool.
And you, Brett,
Good
I'm
picks.
Sure you've got a
Good
couple
picks.
Of interesting
No, I just
picks.
Have one. I just have one, and one I'm actually looking forward to using when I'm in Barcelona. It's something we chatted about recently, and then I've had a chat to a couple of people about this recently also, and they said it's actually a great solution that I was massively skeptical about for a while, and that's a new product called No Roaming.
Oh, yeah. I used it in January in America,
and you know
it really
what?
Worked well for me.
I didn't use it initially because... So let me dial it back a sec and tell you what it is. So essentially what it is, it's this little kit that comes very nicely packaged. It's got something about the size of a business card with like a little SIM cutter type vibe. And it's got a thin film SIM card. It's essentially the same thickness as a ribbon cable with some glue, like sticky stuff on the one side. And what happens is you figure out the size of your SIM card. You use this little SIM cutter to cut this thin film SIM card out and stick it over your existing SIM card. So what happens is, in terms of thickness, it's a tiny bit thicker, but nothing that would, you know, cause it to not be able to fit into a phone or come out of a phone really, really easily. But essentially, it's a SIM card that you stick over your existing SIM card. So that's the first part. Then the second part of the equation is a piece of software which you run that allows you to top money up into a wallet, so to speak, on this application, and you can use that to then make calls, SMSs, and data while you're abroad.
Can I just interject there? The thing that really is smart is what they do is they stick their SIM on top of your SIM.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's the first thing. You pop it in and you download the app.
Yep.
The app recognizes the SIM and then decides where you are, on your home network or you're outside your home.
So if you're in South Africa, it puts you back on your home network.
It says home network, and yeah, auto-switches. The genius of this, and this is what makes it better than any other roaming solution I've played with, you land in New York, you switch your phone on, it says new network found, automatically switches you to the no roaming network in the US, and you get all those rates instantly. But here's where it really gets smart. At the same time, it's forwarded your South African number to your American number, which comes as part of the deal. And when you make phone calls to someone in South Africa using the American network that you're on, it pops up on their phone as a South African number. So now, it's totally transparent.
Now, from what I understand, which is pretty really much smart. Pretty much you're receiving calls overseas. It doesn't cost you anything.
No, it does.
Right?
Cost. There's an incoming cost. It's 9 cents.
It's 9 cents. There you go. It's really,
and
really
outgoing is not much more. I think it's 11 cents.
Absolutely.
So it saved me in January thousands of rands on people randomly phoning me for stuff.
Absolutely. And this is the whole reason I always turned my roaming off, ironically enough, was because of this. I just switched to SMS roaming, which is not a solution either because of the bloody amount of money you end up paying in SMS anyway.
Because
you're paying like 5 or 6 rand a lot of the time to send one text message. Right. So there's that. It works with text also, correct?
Well, there's only one drawback in the whole system. If you get texts sent to your local South African number, that doesn't roam yet. Because the forwarding goes through a landline.
Ah, all right.
So they don't forward text. But text you send and text you receive will still appear from your American number.
As long as the international number. All right.
So that works. But okay. And the data is good but not great. That was the only thing I found quite expensive. It worked out at $100 for a gig.
Yeah. So look,
that is pretty expensive.
So the conventional wisdom at the moment, if you're somebody that's really not all that concerned about the cost, I mean, you try to do a
roaming is mad.
No, but I'm saying a lot of people like in the legal profession and stuff like that, where they're charging all of this back to their clients, are not going to be that concerned about paying $100 for a gig of data, right? Somebody like me, that's going to be like a lot of cash. It's definitely a lot less than what you'd pay for data that was roaming data, all right? So,
it's 80-90%.
So it sorts that problem out. But then the reality is it's still prudent to get yourself a data sim, pop it into a MiFi when you're overseas.
Though,
the nice thing is you can WhatsApp then, you can still do iMessage if you're on an iOS device, etc.
If you use moderate data, it works brilliantly.
So I've just had fantastic feedback about it. I've cut it onto my SIM card so far, installed the application, and I'm on the local network, which is great. Looking forward to using it when I go overseas, specifically from the perspective that if I knew I could pay like $100 or $150 over the whole duration of my trip and still be able to make voice calls when I was overseas, absolute pleasure.
No, it's a winner. And as I said, the beauty, the cleverness of this whole no-roaming system is that you don't actually have to do anything. We landed on the way back from America in Dakar. Not supposed to, but while we were sitting on the tarmac, I switched my phone on.
Yeah.
It said, connected to no roaming network. Oh. In came all my messages, and it cost a couple of cents. It was not expensive.
The other thing that I absolutely love about it is the fact that it's deducted off of a prepaid balance.
Yes.
So the nice thing is, right, your Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, or Telkom mobile SIM card, and this is either, you know, a nice thing. A lot of those networks don't roam internationally, all right? So the nice thing is, if you're on prepaid, you won't have roaming capabilities active, but you stick one of these on, and bam, suddenly you can roam. There's no chance of bull shock.
No.
Because you put 500 rand into the thing, the worst that could happen is it could deduct down your 500 bucks,
right? 2 weeks in the US cost me $100. $110 for 2 weeks. And here's an interesting comparison. Walk into a T-Mobile store, get their 1 gig package with everything for a month. It comes to, with tax and the SIM you've got to buy, about $80.
There you go.
So for 1 gig of data and some calls and everything, but no international calling or anything, it costs you $80 on a T-Mobile SIM. With no roaming, it cost me $30 more for the convenience of being on one phone, my home network.
Never changing anything.
Everything phone. People got hold of me normally. I got hold of them normally. The kids phoned me. It was no hassle. Data worked. It was expensive. The next time you go back now, if you've got a T-Mobile SIM, it's a lot cheaper. But generally, for most businesses...
But also, don't forget that if you don't travel back to the US for 8 months, that SIM's dead.
That SIM dies.
You've got to throw it away and start again and buy a new SIM.
So they've been pretty strategic in how they've priced it and where they've done it. Oh, and they do have one interesting thing if you're a heavy data usage. They've got a $7.95 a day unlimited data.
Ah.
So if you're there for 3-4 days... and you're going to use your phone heavily for data.
Smack it, yeah.
It's $21 or $30 for unlimited data for the period that you're there, which is an absolute no-brainer.
That is very good.
So a lot of little benefits of no roaming. So, I've been super chuffed with it.
So good check pick. It out. Good check pick. It out. It's available in some retailers around South Africa now, as far as I know. So when I got the SIM, you know, the SIM and the whole solution initially, it was about 3-4 months ago, kind of on a pre-launch thing, and ironically enough, didn't travel overseas, so you know I didn't get a chance to use it. Looking forward to using it now, but mainly after all of this positive feedback. The no roaming, of course, is K-N-O-W.
K-N-O roaming,
as in like I know how to roam, right? Not no roaming, as in like nine roaming. But yeah, very very cool idea. What the pack costs? So what does the pack cost?
The pack's about 150 rand.
Okay, so you pay 150 bucks to get set up, and then you've obviously got to put money into the thing. So, but interesting. I think that's a really really cool idea, and I'm looking forward to
it. I didn't mention they give you for free. You can buy other numbers in other countries, but they give you a UK and US number for free.
For free, that's useful.
Which is pretty smart.
Very rad. There you go. No roaming. Check it out. Just Google it, and I think there's a. It's a .com, but just Google
it.
And
no roaming.
There's a whole bunch of reviews online and everything else. Mr. Ambrose, thank you for coming and hanging out and speaking to me about these things that we really don't care about, namely wearables, fitness, streaming audio, smartphones. I mean, it's
saving
all
money while you travel. That sort
ridiculous.
Of good stuff.
Give me a good old crank phone and a
I actually had a whole one out
two
the other
tins
day.
With some string
funny.
In between.
It was a big, noisy, crackly thing because lightning took out my mobile phones, the portables in the home.
Yeah.
So I had to haul out one of those old ones. Jeez, it felt
funny. I don't even have any one of those.
I found one lying in the backyard somewhere.
Jeez, it's fantastic.
Anyway, it was great there fun, and it was cool to be on the first HTXT version of this.
Absolutely. The one we did last week was... was officially the first one for 2015, but this is the first one where we really announced the fact that HTXT.
So it's the first official one.
So if you've caught this podcast and want to go and subscribe to the new feed and everything else, theoretically everything should transition seamlessly. But if that doesn't work, if you go to ZATS. .htxt.co.za, you should be redirected to the microsite which houses all of the episodes of the ZA Tech Show. So that's part one. If you use a non-conventional podcatcher, when I say non-conventional, I'm talking like not iTunes, because 90% of people use iTunes. If you use a podcatcher other than that, and you want to tap directly into the RSS feed, you can go to zats.htxt.co.za/feed. All right. Bang that into your RSS reader or bang that straight into your podcatcher, and what will happen is it'll automatically get the new episodes when those are available. Of course, also iTunes. So if you just search for ZA Tech Show in the iTunes store, look for it under podcasts, you'll find the most recent 5 episodes there. There's also a blog post on the HTXT website that has every single episode of the ZA Tech Show going back to number 1. Don't go listen to number 1, though. It's terrible. It's very embarrassing. It's scary. It's like, it's like that photo of Stephen from when he was in the 60s with his afro. You know, you don't want to show that.
I didn't have an afro, but I did have big hair and big glasses.
Well, there you go.
I was a little young, but still.
But then at the same time, now that we're on the htxt.co.za domain, all of our details are there. If you want to drop us a mail directly, feel free to do so. If you want to tweet us, it's either at htxt.africa or at ZATechShow. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get some suggestions for future stories and stuff like that. And if you're really, really good, we might bring back the live stream. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, there's a ton of content for you guys to look through. Until next week, take care. Cheers.